us.
Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Gota Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Haridas Thakur ki jai. Pram Seka Hosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopadan ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Sri Mathura Dham ki jai. Sri Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Ganga Mai ki jai, Jamuna Mai ki jai, Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Go Premanand. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Okay, so welcome everybody to the final seminar on Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. This is the 18th of May, 2007. We're in Sydney. So we've been talking about health, the topic of health. We've described over the last few nights about Srila Prabhupada's own personal health, all the difficulties that he had to face as he spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Now this seminar is actually, there's a lot more material than I can actually cover and finish it all tonight. So what I'm going to do now is skip ahead a little bit, and we've talked about Prabhupada's own personal philosophy towards medicine and how he was dealing with his body. And now I'm going to jump ahead. And we'll have a look at some of the instructions and comments that Prabhupada himself made to his disciples about how they should look after their health. So let me just find the right spot here. There's a whole section here about hospitals, which I'm not going to read right now. If we have time, we'll go back and we'll do that. Prabhupada was not very much in favor of hospitals being on our land. When we were in Bombay and they were just constructing the temple there, then there was a question of whether we would allocate some room or rooms for a clinic. And Prabhupada said no. He said there are already so many hospitals. He said we have a transcendental hospital. So all the ordinary hospital work, that's already going on. But he said, our business is to cure this business of birth and death altogether, final cure. So he wasn't very much in favor of just ordinary medical facilities. Now, one interesting thing, of course, Prabhupada's early life, as a grihastha, he earned a living by having a pharmacy. Yeah, the Prayag Pharmacy in Allahabad. He had that for many years. He used to make his own medicine. He used to also wholesale medicine on behalf of big companies all around northern India. But one interesting thing that he told me one time when we were in Mayapur was about not his previous life prior to ISKCON, but his previous life prior to this one. And I had just gone into Prabhupada's room. This was on March the 15th in 1976. And I just happened to go into Prabhupada's room. He was just sitting there. And then suddenly, without any prompting, he volunteered some interesting information about himself. He told me that once an astrologer had informed him that in his previous life he had not committed a single sin. He had been a physician, and just one time in the course of his work he had killed a poisonous snake in order to extract the venom for medicine. But this is not considered to be sinful. So my mind immediately, I started speculating, who could Prabhupada have been if he was a physician in his last life? And of course in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it mentions there that one of the chief devotees of Lord Chaitanya was Murari Gupta, who was a physician. So I was trying to figure out, maybe he's, you know, Murari Gupta or like this. But I was hesitant to ask you know, him directly, well, who were you, or do you know who, you know, who you were? So, you know, my mood was, if the spiritual master reveals something about himself out of his own accord, that's all well and good. But I didn't feel it my place to intrude directly into his persona. Still, it seemed an opportunity too good to miss. And so I discreetly tried to draw Srila Prabhupada into revealing a little more. So I said, well, when would that birth have been, Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada was very nonchalant and noncommittal. He said, well, say one birth, at most 100 years. So you just calculate from 1896, 100 years previously. And then he changed the subject, and that was an opportunity lost. Anyway, it was just a little interesting little bit of information that Prabhupada dropped there. Because in this life, as I say, Prabhupada was a physician of sorts. And he knew a lot about Ayurveda and, you know, different medical practices. And one time when we were in New Brindavan, this was on June 27, 1976, we were out on a morning walk. And as we walked along, Prabhupada was pointing out on the roadside patches of herbs and things that were growing wild. And he was telling us, he said, there's a class of men, they are called Bediyas. They know this herb, which herb is for the medicine for a certain disease, and they sell that on the market. So every one of these is meant for some medicine, and these men, they know that art. So I asked him if that kind of information is in the Vedas. Prabhupada said, yes, Ayurveda, there is the book, Dravya Guna. All kinds of herbs, metals, even different kinds of flesh of different animals, they are all mentioned. Hundreds of different kinds of animals' flesh, how it can be utilized for different diseases. So the descriptions are all given there. That was a little surprising to us. So I asked him, they use flesh for curing diseases? Yes, Prabhupada said, matter-of-factly. Animal killing is only allowed when it is absolutely necessary for medicine. Suppose by killing one animal, hundreds of lives are saved. So that is allowed. So one preparation is called Chagalaga Grita. A live goat is put into ghee with other ingredients, and that is a good medicine for tuberculosis. Pushyakrishna was a bit incredulous. They actually cook a live goat in ghee? Maybe we should withhold this science from the Western world for a while, he said, half jokingly. Prabhupada grinned. No, you are expert already. Means the Westerners are already expert at killing animals anyway. So I asked if it was done in the same mood as Vedic animal sacrifices, where the mantras were chanted to give a new life to the animal, or to the soul in that animal. Prabhupada shook his head. He said animals were sacrificed and reborn to test the potency of the Vedic mantras, but in this case, the animal was simply used for medicine. And then another one that came up about using animals as for medicine. Later on, September 7th, we were in Brindavan. So we had had a lot of problems with monkeys, even now. Actually, I read an interesting article that in the 1850s, there was some discussion about what to do with the plague of monkeys in Brindavan. So it's not a new thing. Yeah. Wherever you go in Brindavan, the whole place is packed up with monkeys and they cause all kinds of problems. They attack you, they steal your glasses, they do all kinds of things. So when we were there with Srila Prabhupada, he had a small garden at the back of his quarters and there were some nice banana trees growing and the monkeys would come over the wall and, you know, chew down the banana trees. So it was a big problem. So myself and this boy Akshaya, who was Prabhupada's door guard, we decided that, you know, we'd try to get rid of the monkeys. So we kept a couple of lathis, you know, big canes, sticks. And whenever we saw the monkeys come in the garden, he would run around the back. There was a high wall, so he'd go behind the wall and wait for them. And I'd run through, you know, through Prabhupada's quarters into the garden and, you know, attack them with a stick, and then they'd jump up over the wall, and then he'd be waiting for them to, because we never actually hit them. You know, I mean, they're very fast, and some of them are quite ferocious. Anyway, it was a bit of a problem. So this particular day, Prabhupada had requested me to serve him his lunch on banana leaves that we took from his garden. He said, because there's so many banana leaves, he said, you can utilize. One leaf is sufficient for four plates at least. In fact, Prabhupada preferred to take his prasadam from banana leaves. Yeah, because in Bengal they just have the big banana leaf. In Vrindavan we had nice marble plates, carved plates. But Prabhupada had us put banana leaves on top of the plates and then put the prasadam on the banana leaves. Nice. So Charanaravindam, he was a British devotee, he was Prabhupada's gardener, Hare Krishna. He was Prabhupada's gardener. So he said that the monkeys also like the banana leaves, but to eat. And especially he said they like to eat the new shoots in the center of the tree, because if they do that, then the tree doesn't grow anymore. So he was upset because he was the gardener. So thinking of the groups of monkeys that have become a nuisance in taking up residence in the open verandas of our guest house and inside the domes of the temple until we sealed them up, I laughed and I asked Srila Prabhupada, do monkeys have any use? Prabhupada's reply surprised me a little. He said, yes, they have only use. Their fat is very good medicine for burns. Some portion is burned, so that monkey fat is very good medicine for that. Anyway, of course, we didn't have any dead monkeys, but we got to the point. I ran through Prabhupada's room one day. He was having a meeting. Somebody was there, and I came running through, and you know, Prabhupada saw me. I had this big stick, and he said, "What's going on?" So I said, "Well, the monkeys are in the back garden." So I'm going to try to drive them out. So Prabhupada said, yes, he said, beat them severely. Because I went out and we couldn't get rid of them. We tried so many things. And then Prabhupada said, actually, the system is, he said, you kill a monkey and then you hang it upside down on the veranda. And then all the other monkeys, they won't come near. He said, wow. I was wondering, is Prabhupada telling us to kill a monkey now, you know? But he said, of course, he said, we can't do that. But he said, there's some men, and they have, you know, like a doll, yeah, a dummy monkey. So he said, you bring him, and we'll try it. So we did that. We actually had, you know, a toy monkey hanging upside down. And, of course, the local monkeys, they just looked at it and spat on it and continued on their, you know, their merry way. It didn't make any difference to them at all. Okay, anyway, so getting back to Ayurveda, October the 6th, 1976, Dr. S.B. Chatterjee sent a response by return mail to Srila Prabhupada's reply to him from last week. Dr. Chatterjee gave more detailed ideas for his plan for an international university based on Vedic principles. This is what we were just talking about, that no shortage of people want to do this kind of thing. So he suggested a system of awarding diplomas and degrees up to the level of PhD and the establishment of postgraduate and research facilities. He proposed a department teaching many modern languages such as Sanskrit, a music department offering training in classical Drupad, Dhamma Tumri, Kirtan and modern devotional songs, as well as dance and drama based on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, an Ayurvedic or homeopathic department combined with modern hospital equipment, then an agricultural department, a museology department dealing with archaeology, and other sections dealing with commerce, history, and domestic science. So he had a whole plan for a university. So he said it is not necessary to start all the departments at one time. Some will be open at a time and others will remain pending. But the Sanskrit will have to play its own parts. Your Gurukul attempt is a step in the right direction, and it will develop more and more with this scheme. We shall have to start this ISKCON University at any cost, and this music and dance drama departments will have appreciation abroad, as also Sanskrit, consisting as it does the clues of our ancient civilization and heritage, ancient economic and social aspects, and ancient knowledge about science and technology from the days of yore. So this was Chatterjee making these comments. So he had many more ideas which he wanted to discuss when Prabhupada goes to Calcutta, and he was eager to begin. As you have stated, there will be no financial difficulty. Prabhupada told him that. I think it is better that we start this university in no time, in the interest of all concerned with a strict Sanskrit basis. So Prabhupada is indeed interested in his proposal. He had visited Kurukshetra last year with Ambarish Prabhu with the view to starting a Vedic university based on Varnashram principles. But due to local politics, we have so far been denied in our attempt to get land donated for the purpose. Prabhupada wrote to Dr. Chatterjee an encouraging reply, although he was careful not to endorse all of his ideas. So your suggestion is very good, Prabhupada said. If the verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita are presented in classical art, it will be something wonderful. The whole world will appreciate. So we already have a dramatic party in New York, and their performances are very much appreciated. So actually, in July, we'd been there in New York, the West 55th Street building, that was 11 stories. One floor of that, there was a small theater. And the devotees had a whole Bhakti Rasa theater group, and they were doing performances based on the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada actually saw, there was a devotee, and he was from New York, and Jorge, and he joined here in Melbourne in 1972. He was with the Netherlands Dance Theater, and they were doing a world tour. And somewhere or another, he met the devotees. He left the Netherlands Dance Theatre and joined the Melbourne Temple. And he was, you know, only was a real professional dancer and choreographer. Later on, he couldn't kind of settle to temple life and he left, but he still kept up his association. So when we got to New York in 1976, he was back living in the temple, and he was working with Sudama Maharaj on different theatrical performances. And they did one, a dialogue, Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot, and they did that for Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada appreciated it very much. So he was just referring to that. And he said, Indian classical songs are appreciated here and in foreign countries also. So this program of presenting the Bhagavatam in classical song is a good idea. So regarding your other suggestions, Ayurvedic medicine is a good idea, provided we can get an expert manufacturer. And agriculture we can also take up. We already have land and many farms. So too much modern machinery is not suitable for our country. So that was an endorsement that Prabhupada gave there to have an Ayurvedic college, basically. So it was something that he envisioned that ISKCON could get into in the future. You know, these kind of social things and cultural aspects of Vedic life. And Ayurveda, of course, very nice. Although he had previously received a letter from Rasananda Prabhu. Rasananda had... He had been a medical student for some time, and then he gave it up so that he'd become a devotee. Then when he was in India, he kind of found himself at a loose end. And so he had written to Srila Prabhupada asking if he could take up or go back to college to learn Ayurvedic medicine. And then he could treat the devotees. And Prabhupada wrote back to him, he said no. He said, whatever you already know, you engage that in Krishna's service. But he said, what will happen if you go back, you go to college, and then you die? Yeah, then you haven't attained any Krishna consciousness, and you haven't gotten your material goal either. So he said, whatever you know how to do now, you use that and go on with your service, that's all. But there again, now we can see that he wasn't against, you know, having a proper school system and having people trained up in all these different arts and Vedic sciences. Okay, so that was, you know, a few comments Prabhupada made there about Ayurvedic medicines. Now we'll go on to Prabhupada's advice and concern for the health of his disciples and followers. So there was one lady devotee from, I think, Seattle, Rudrani. Interestingly enough, she just left her body last year. But you'll see what the problem was. Even this is in 1976, October 23rd. So Prabhupada had received a letter from the temple president of the Seattle temple. His name was Balakrishna. So he asked for some advice. One of his best distributors, Rudrani Dasi, although only 23 years old, is so badly stricken with arthritis that she can barely walk, sit, or even sleep. Despite this, when she is able to go out, she sells twice as many books as anybody else. She has a strong desire to continue with her service, but no doctor has been able to help her. She is currently taking 25 aspirins a day just to be able to function. She's only 23 years old. Balakrishna expressed his reluctance to bother Srila Prabhupada, but due to frustration with any other solution, he now asked whether Prabhupada could recommend any Ayurvedic doctor or medicine, or should she just accept her karma and go on serving as best that she can until she dies. So Prabhupada was he was as philosophical about her problem as he is about his own health. He offered no other panacea than that given by Krishna himself. His advice came right out of the Bhagavad Gita 2.14 and 81 years of experience. The girl who has got health problems must learn to be tolerant. As long as the material body will be there, there will only be pain. Pleasure is a misconception. You should make that into a bumper sticker. Pleasure is a misconception. So that was Rudrani. Now, interestingly enough, she took that instruction of Prabhupada to heart. And as I say, she lived until just last year. And she had the same problem. She ended up marrying an Ayurvedic doctor. And she went on with the service. And one of her favorite services was looking after Tulsi Devi. So she just had complete faith in Srila Prabhupada's words there. She took it to heart. And she just tolerated it, did what service she could do. And when she left her body, you know, the devotees were all there. And one of the Gurukul girls had made her a little card. And she'd put some drawing of Tulsi Devi in a gopi form on the front of the card. And they gave that to Rudrani. And it was just, you know, moments before she left her body. And she got the card, she looked at it. And then her eyes opened up. She said, "Now the real Tulsi has come." And that was it. She left. So she got a glorious end. I mean, she went back to Godhead. So that was, you know, she had faith in Prabhupada. And that, you know, kept her going all those years despite this difficulty. So October the 25th, 1976. This is a couple of days later. Prabhupada got another similar kind of letter. This one directly from a girl in Los Angeles who was suffering. So there was a poignant letter from Krishna Vilasini Dasi in Los Angeles. She explained that she has a debilitating muscular disorder which over the last 2 years has practically incapacitated her. She can barely talk and has almost lost the use of her arms and legs. Regarding reading is very difficult, she said in a letter. But I force the issue because I am afraid I may not finish your books before I die. Lamenting that she is unable even to do the simplest service, she wrote, "I am humbly asking if there is any way at all to regain even enough health to be able to sit and engage in some simple service. If it is my destiny to live a long time in this condition, I am begging and crying that you will mercifully benedict me with spiritual strength to remain always at your lotus feet." Prabhupada was touched by her plea, but again he offered the same practical advice and philosophical perspective that he gave for Rudrani Dasi from Seattle 2 days ago. As long as the body will be there, there will only be pain. Pleasure is only a misconception. Don't be sorry if you are in an unfortunate condition. It can also be fortunate if you take advantage by becoming serious about becoming Krishna conscious. Follow the regulative principles, chant 16 rounds, and as far as possible render service and study my books. Success is sure. So that was another good bit of advice. Just keep on. Whatever happens to your body, you're going to lose it anyway at some point. The main thing is do your spiritual service, no matter what the condition is. And then your success is sure. I don't know what happened to Krishna Vilasini. I never heard about her after that. So again, another piece of advice was given to Kirtananda Maharaj. He had come to see Prabhupada in Bombay in December of 1975. And he had, during his childhood, he had suffered from polio. So he had some problems. Sometimes he got paralysis and things like this. So Kirtananda Swami, one of Prabhupada's first disciples and a GBC member, arrived very early this morning from America. He gave a brief report on New Brindavan, our ISKCON farm community in West Virginia. He distributed some delicious Maha Prasadam from Sri Sri Radha Brindavan Chandra. Prabhupada asked Kirtananda about his health, and Maharaj explained that he has been suffering due to some paralysis in his left arm. Prabhupada didn't register much concern, telling him not to worry. He said that we should expect that the body will give us trouble. We must simply take shelter of the holy names of the Lord. So, to help the devotees when they are in bodily ailment is a great, great service. So having said those things, it's not that Prabhupada, you know, denied the use of medicine and, you know, trying to help. But there's a philosophical perspective. Now, if you note there, that kind of advice Prabhupada was giving to devotees that had very chronic problems, you know, by their own admittance, you know, possibly incurable. And therefore, the only advice that you can give, you know, is not that you have hope against hope, but you take shelter in Krishna, you realize you're not the body, and you just tolerate it. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Prabhupada was advising every devotee not to get medical attention if they have a problem. So, December the 8th, 1976, we were in Hyderabad, and at the farm there. After breakfast, Jagadish Prabhu brought in the mail. Srila Prabhupada received a letter from Dr. Suresh Chandra, a Bengali gentleman, who wrote that after contacting the devotees, he wished to offer himself for full-time service. He is a single man, and therefore his needs are simple. He wants only to be able to render service to the devotees by using his medical skills to treat their ailments. Although the letter was written in Bengali, Prabhupada chose to reply in English. He was pleased by the prospect of an educated man joining ISKCON, and he replied very positively. It appears that you are an unmarried brahmachari. So if you continue this status of life for the matter of executing devotional service, that will be a great advantage. Many great personalities remain brahmachari throughout their whole lives and get freedom from material bondage very easily. Of course, marriage is not prohibited in devotional service, but if one can remain brahmachari in unmarried life, that is a great facility. I am very much pleased with your proposal to devote your life for Krishna's service. You are a qualified man. Anyone can become a pure devotee by engaging himself in the business of glorifying the Supreme Lord in the Sankirtan movement. So long as we have got this material body, the problems of birth, death, old age and disease will continue. Therefore, to help the devotees when they are in bodily ailments is also a great, great service. If you so desire, you can join our movement. So that was a nice encouragement. A great, great service if you serve the devotees. So, very nice. And another instance of a devotee becoming ill. This was Harikesh. He was on the party when I first joined at the end of 1975. He was Prabhupada's cook. But he was having a lot of problems himself with his stomach and digestion. He had a very chronic kind of condition, so it was making him very ill. So January the 17th, 76, we had arrived in Mayapur. Prabhupada stayed there for about 2 months. So by January 25th, we'd only been there about a week. So Harikesh is becoming increasingly ill. He looks weak and emaciated and has no strength. It is all that he can do just to cook Prabhupada's lunch. Prabhupada observed him going to the toilet just after breakfast. He shook his head and he quoted a Bengali proverb. He who cannot sleep immediately upon resting, and he who passes stool immediately after eating, will very soon be called by Yamaraj. On the other hand, he who passes stool before eating and urine afterwards, the physician cannot make a living from. Prabhupada had all these little Bengali sayings. Every situation there was something that he could say. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. Anyway, so a few days later, January the 31st, Prabhupada continues to follow his usual daily routine. The days are quiet, with no visitors to speak of. It is satisfying to see him getting the well-deserved rest and replenishment that he needs. Harikesh, however, is getting sicker every day. This morning, as I massaged Prabhupada on the veranda, he watched Harikesh slowly emerge from his room. Harikesh was pale. He was hunched over as he shuffled along the veranda to the bathroom before going downstairs to begin cooking. Although it was 11 a.m., he had only just got out of bed. Prabhupada asked me, what does he plan to do? So I told him, I said that Harikesh thinks that his condition is colitis, and he feels that if he stays in India, it will only get worse. He feels that only a return to the West will enable him to get well. But while he feels this way, Harikesh just doesn't want to leave the party. Naturally. But Prabhupada told me that one's health is primary. And in fact, a week later he gave him sannyas, and that was it. He was gone. He sent him back to Europe, where he continued to remain sick. He came back on the party again in July, when we got to London. He came on as the secretary. And he told Prabhupada he was still sick from the same problem. He said, I was thinking that, you know, I was under the illusion of thinking if I leave India, then I'll immediately get well and healthy. He said, but I've been just as sick here as I was there. Anyway, so these are the illusions of material life. So June 22nd, 1976. Actually, yeah, this is going on. So we were in New Brindavan. This was before Harikesh came back on the party. He was preaching in the DDR, that was the Democratic Republic of Deutschland, East Germany at that time. So they were doing some underground preaching there. So he said, in the DDR, things are run in such a way that people are deliberately isolated and may not meet together in groups. Fruits and vegetables are very scarce. Harikesh mentioned that his health is still quite bad. He has not recovered since he left our party in February in Mayapur. A doctor told him that he has a stone or a blockage in the tube that makes the bile go into the stomach. Yet somehow, while preaching, he said, he forgets all this. I can actually feel Krishna holding me up when I preach, he said. So that was June. Then on July, he came back on the party. And then August the 2nd, we were in France at New Mayapur. So Harikesh has been a bit feverish today, and he asked Srila Prabhupada if he should cook tomorrow if he still has a fever. He was a little afraid that maybe, you know, Prabhupada would catch something from him if he's got some kind of virus or something. He was concerned that his sickness might affect Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was more concerned about Harikesh's health. He told him that if he is sick, there are so many others who can cook for him. Harikesh, who seems to have been ill since we were in India together at the beginning of the year, lamented that he could not tolerate being sick anymore. Prabhupada shrugged. He said, the body means sickness. Body itself is sickness. Harikesh laughed. He said that in illusion he had returned from India thinking he would get well, but he was sick here in the West also. He noted, though, that Srila Prabhupada seems to be getting much better. And Prabhupada confirmed that he was, in fact, a little better. So that was August. Then September. September 28th, we were in Brindavan, and Harikesh was sick again. So this morning, Prabhupada received a letter from Harikesh Swami, who was still in Delhi. So what had happened was that when we got to Vrindavan, Prabhupada decided that there wasn't enough engagement for Harikesh as his secretary. And so he decided to send him back to Eastern Europe to do the preaching there. Harikesh really didn't want to go, and he thought that Prabhupada was kicking him out, basically. But anyway, he did it. He went. But as when he left Vrindavan, he went to Delhi. And then we heard he was leaving that evening, and then we heard that he didn't leave. So it was a puzzle what was going on. So then Prabhupada got this letter from Harikesh. He was still in Delhi. And written yesterday, it was a humble plea. He said that he has a serious case of malaria and might even die. Therefore, he begged for forgiveness for his offenses, both against Srila Prabhupada and against myself. When I read out the letter to Prabhupada, he looked at me and shook his head in innocent surprise. I didn't think he was creating any offense, he said. I was also surprised that he had felt that he had offended me, and I was embarrassed to be mentioned in the same frame as Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, the letter invoked Prabhupada's compassion, and he wrote back, I am very much perturbed to hear that you are suffering from malaria in Delhi. So don't be worried, you will very soon recover. But I think it is a hindrance for you for going to Europe. I therefore request you not to proceed to Europe immediately, but stay and recoup your health. And then we shall think over your going abroad. In the meantime, deposit the money. He'd given him some airfare. So now he's telling him, deposit that money in my account in the State Bank of India in Connaught Place. Yeah, Tejas knows the bank and he will do the needful, hoping for your speedy recovery. So a bit perplexed by his suggestion that Harikesh not go to Europe. It had actually been, it was a big thing. It was very traumatic. Prabhupada just decided on the spot, now you're out, you go back to Europe, like this. And Harikesh was stunned, actually, and he was completely depressed by the whole thing, and still Prabhupada pushed him out and made him go. So like this, now Prabhupada was saying, okay, well, stay there, then we'll reconsider you going to Europe again. So I was a bit perplexed by that suggestion that he not go now to Europe. So I asked Prabhupada why he said that. So he clarified his thoughts. He said, it appears that these hindrances mean that perhaps God does not want him to go to Europe. So better wait for some time and then decide. So, you know, it's interesting how Prabhupada was thinking. Perhaps God doesn't want him to go. Anyway, that was Harikesh. He did eventually kind of recover. But another devotee that was on Prabhupada's personal party for about a year and a half was Pradyumna Prabhu. Of course, I think out of all the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, Pradyumna spent more time on Prabhupada's party than anybody in the whole movement. Because he was working with Prabhupada on Sanskrit editing from maybe 69 or 70 onwards. The first time I saw Prabhupada was 72. When he came, we had our temple in Glebe. And Prabhupada's party was Shyamasundara as the secretary, Nanda Kumara as his servant, and Pradyumna Prabhu as his Sanskrit editor. And on and off over the years, Pradyumna kept coming on the party and then going off again. Finally, when we were in Bombay in April of 1976, we were just planning about, you know, going on this last world tour. And Pradyumna had been called up by Srila Prabhupada. He was living in the south. His wife had come to the Mayapur festival, and Prabhupada had asked, what is he doing? And oh, he's studying Sanskrit, and he's living with, Madhva Sampradaya people down in Udupi, I think he was. So Prabhupada said, call him, bring him up. So he came in April to Bombay. And then Prabhupada told him, he said, I want you to come back on my party and travel with me so that we can speed up the translation of the Bhagavatam. So he wasn't able to immediately extract himself from India. So we went, we left Bombay, then we went to Melbourne, we went to Auckland, we went to Fiji. Then at the beginning of May, we arrived in Hawaii, and we were staying there for a month. So on May the 9th, then Pradyumna arrived, finally. He came in from Bombay. And he will travel as a regular member of Prabhupada's party to do the Sanskrit editing on the tape transcriptions before they are sent to Los Angeles. Pradyumna Prabhu has 6 large boils on his hips and buttocks and cannot sit down properly. He hasn't seen a doctor. So Prabhupada told him to immediately get medical treatment. He was very concerned and he wasn't happy that Pradyumna was neglecting his health. Later in the day, Pradyumna came back from the doctors with a large bottle of the antibiotic tetracycline, which he has to take every 4 hours for the next 10 days. So that was on the 9th. So May the 15th, Pradyumna has been too ill to accompany Prabhupada on his morning walks, spending most of his time lying in pain on the floor. He couldn't even move by that time. So he's been suffering a great deal from his boils. The biggest, which is on his right hip, was neither diminishing nor coming to a head. The angry red mound was so swollen, it looked as though somebody had stuffed a tennis ball underneath his skin. I was trying to persuade him to give it another couple of days for the medicine to take effect when Srila Prabhupada came into the room to check him and see how he was. As soon as he saw the condition of the boils, he ordered him to go at once to the doctor and get them lanced. Pradyumna limped out, hobbling back later on crutches. The doctor at the clinic had immediately put him on the operating table and cut open his hip. A reddish green pus had burst forth, spraying around the entire room. The doctor cut him. It just exploded like this. It took a full 15 minutes to clean the incision, which was a half an inch deep, a quarter of an inch wide, and about 5 inches long. So he came back with this huge gash running down his hip there. He hadn't been very far off from contracting gangrene. The timeliness of Prabhupada's advice impressed upon us once again that he knows exactly what to do in all circumstances. As soon as Prabhupada saw it, he said, you know, go and get treatment immediately. Because Pradyumna was in the usual kind of devotee dilemma. He was, you know, he was ill and he was thinking, I'm just in Maya. Sometimes, you know, we have that mood that this is just Maya, you know, go on with my service, Krishna will look after me, you know, like this, and you're getting sicker and sicker and sicker, like that. Anyway, so that, he had that slash in his hip for about 2 or 3 months before it healed up properly. Yeah. But it was a classic example of not looking after yourself. But Prabhupada always told us, you have to look after yourself because you need your body to do your service. Yeah. So I had also some experience with the boil. January 13th, 1976, we were in Calcutta. And during the morning, Prabhupada noticed that I was limping because of a boil that was forming on my leg. Later, while talking with Jayapataka Maharaj, he called me in and he told me to show him the boil. Prabhupada was so thoughtful that he asked Jayapataka Maharaj to go out and buy me some medicine to heal the boil. I was a bit embarrassed that a sannyasi should be sent to run an errand on my behalf, but Prabhupada was more concerned to see that it was cured. Like a loving father, he always takes the time to see that we are properly looked after, especially concerning our health. So that was one time I got a bit sick with that boil, and Prabhupada told the, he discussed with Jayapataka Maharaj, and then he said, you get him this Saribadi salsa. Yeah, it's a blood purifier. And he got me a bottle of that. I took that and the boil went away. It worked perfectly. Another interesting thing about boils, there was a kind of a rumor going around in those days that boils were a sign of envy. Somebody had told us that, yeah? That if you're too envious, you get boils. I don't know where that came from. But when we got to New York in July of 76, I had another boil that came up right between my eyes there. And I was a bit worried about that. And I asked Srila Prabhupada about this story. Does that mean, you know, people say that boils are a symptom of envy? And Prabhupada said, he said he'd never heard that one before. I think it was a sign of too much sugar in the diet. That was anyway, so there are different times, you know, we would get sick, and especially in India. Sometimes you get mysterious viruses and malaria and all. I had all of these things during the time that I was with Prabhupada. So one time, later on, August the 23rd, we had gone down to Hyderabad, and Prabhupada had opened the temple at that time. And I mentioned this story the other day, but I'll say it again for those that weren't here. So this particular morning, I kind of woke up and I felt really weak. And I knew I had something was going on. It wasn't so bad, but I just felt off and a little weak. So I asked Hari Kesh, you know, can you record Srila Prabhupada on the morning walk this morning? Because that was one of my services, was, you know, recording all the conversations and classes and walks and things. So he said, why? So I said, well, I'm just feeling a bit weak and, you know, I want to stay back and just take a little extra rest. So he just, you know, he shook his head, he gave me a grin, he said, you're finished. Like this. I said, no, I'll be okay. Anyway, off he went. So then by midday, when it came to, you know, give Prabhupada his massage, I had a fever by this time and really extreme weakness, but somehow or another I still thought that I could massage Srila Prabhupada. So I went in as usual, and after offering my obeisances, I knelt before him to massage his head with sandalwood oil. With each movement of my arms and hands, I could feel my strength draining away. I barely made it through the 15-minute stint on his head. Then I moved around to do his back. Sitting down cross-legged, I put my hands up on his shoulders and just hung there in total exhaustion. I couldn't move even a finger. So Prabhupada was sitting there, he looked up like this. I was just hanging there on his back. So Prabhupada had sat patiently without comment as I had feebly worked on his head. Now he half turned his head and he glanced at me over his shoulder. So you were ill? I couldn't even speak. I nodded weakly and he told me, all right, you go and take rest and send somebody else in to finish the massage. I couldn't even say thank you. It was a major endeavor just to get up and head for the door. I didn't dare offer my obeisances, fearing that I might not be able to get up again. So Hari Kesh was in our room typing as I walked in through the door. He looked up in surprise. Finished already? And I thought, yes, I'm finished. And then I immediately collapsed in a heap on the floor, unable to say a word. Prabhupada, Hari Kesh exclaimed in alarm, thinking that something dreadful must have happened. Ignoring me, he jumped up and ran into Prabhupada's room. A minute later, he came back, relieved that nothing serious was afoot and concerned about my condition. After another minute, I was finally able to speak, and I told him that he had better finish Prabhupada's massage. So Hari Kesh changed into his gamcha, and he went in to complete Prabhupada's massage. Although he had never given Prabhupada his massage before, he had seen it done many times, and so he enthusiastically put himself to the task. Suddenly, Prabhupada said, oh, you've learned how to massage? Well, no, Prabhupada, I'm just speculating. Hari Kesh replied a little hesitantly. And Prabhupada smiled. He said, but it's very good. So he continued for about 10 minutes. But then after that, his arms got so tired that he could hardly press any more. So Prabhupada noticed that he was getting weaker and weaker. And finally, he shook his head. He said, you have no strength. Go and get Pradyumna. So, lean fellow that Pradyumna is, he also could not do a satisfactory job. And so the two of them ended up doing it together to finish Prabhupada's massage. And Prabhupada, I haven't put it here actually, but Prabhupada actually told them, he said, you're like a couple of women. So on Prabhupada's order, a doctor was called for me. So he came in at about 4 p.m. And after a brief examination, he gave his diagnosis, a strong bout of flu. He gave me an injection, and I spent the rest of the day on my back. This evening, Prabhupada mercifully came in to see how I was. He's always concerned to see that we maintain good health and is very compassionate. He asked what the doctor had said and how I felt, and then he told me to rest until I felt better. He also visited Pradyumna's son, Aniruddha, who was ill with a boil on his leg. So Pradyumna's son at that time was 7 years old. So what happened was that Pradyumna rejoined the party in May when we were in Hawaii. Then when we went to the mainland, we went to Los Angeles at the beginning of June, and Pradyumna's wife, Arundhati, and his son, Aniruddha, they were there in Los Angeles. And Aniruddha was at the school there. Then we continued on the tour, and eventually we got to New Vrindavan, and then Arundhati and Aniruddha came to New Vrindavan. So they'd taken the boy out of the school, and Arundhati was very expert at typing and transcribing Prabhupada's translation work. So she came onto the party as the transcriber. Pradyumna was already there editing, and Aniruddha then began to do homeschooling. And Prabhupada said that was good. He didn't insist on the kids going to the Gurukul. He insisted that they get a good education. So he said if he can get educated at homeschooling, that's fine, no problem, as long as he's learning properly. So they stayed on the party all the way up until Prabhupada's disappearance in November of 77. So Pradyumna, that was like a year and a half on the party, and little Aniruddha actually travelled with Prabhupada for about a year. It was very fortunate. So anyway, that was a couple of incidences. I haven't got it here, but just not long after that, we went to Aligarh, and this was on October the 9th. We'd been in Vrindavan for a month. Then we did a two-day program in Aligarh, and then from there we went to Delhi and then Chandigarh. So when we were in Aligarh, I again became very ill. I had gone in to give Prabhupada his evening massage. I sat on the bed next to him, and then as soon as I touched him, all the strength in my body just seemed to drain away, and my temperature went sky high. It just shot up. It must have gone up to about 104. And I just couldn't do anything. So I told Prabhupada, I said, I think I'm too sick to be able to do this. And so he said, all right, you go and take rest, but then somebody else will have to come in. We had this devotee, Akshaya. He was a British devotee, and he had been put on the party to be Prabhupada's door guard. So his business was that when Prabhupada was doing his dictation work in the night time, then Akshaya would sleep outside the front of his door there. So this time at night, 11 o'clock at night it was, he was still sitting there on a chair. So I went and I called him and I said, you know, I can't do the massage, so you try. So it was a golden opportunity for Akshaya. He'd been on the party for a couple of months, and now he was actually going to get the chance to do some direct service to Prabhupada. So I thought I'll stay there. I was still, you know, kind of functional, but I had no strength. So I stayed in the room so I could instruct Akshaya how to do the massage. So he grabbed all the Prabhupada's feet, and then Prabhupada immediately turned to, he was lying on the bed, he immediately turned to me and said, oh, he said his hands are wet. So I asked Akshaya, I said, Akshaya Prabhu, I said, are your hands wet? He said, oh, well, yeah, Prabhu, they're a bit sweaty. Like this. So that was it. I said, okay, sorry, finished. Go back on your chair out the door there. So, because he was nervous and his hands were sweaty. So as soon as he touched Prabhupada, he didn't like it. So he missed his chance. It so happened that was an old devotee, Gaur-Sundar, who had joined in 67, and him and his wife, Govinda Dasi, they had been Prabhupada's servant and secretary. And they did some nice service. It was a bit artistic, and he did some line drawings that were used in the original edition of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Then later on, Prabhupada sent them to Hawaii. Then after a year or two, he left the movement. He kind of went off on his own and, you know, he was doing his own thing. Prabhupada had seen him in 76 when we went to Hawaii, but he was very kind of unresponsive. Prabhupada tried to encourage him, and he was polite, but he, you know, just totally dull. And one thing that Prabhupada, you know, emphasized to him is at least chant your rounds. So apparently he started doing that, and then in October, just the day before we were due to go to Aligarh, he turned up in Vrindavan and he came to see Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, well, we're having, you know, a program in Aligarh, it's just an hour's drive, why don't you come with us tomorrow? So he agreed. So he came, and then he was staying in the same room with me. So then in the night time, then I got this problem. And then Akshaya couldn't do it, so I told Prabhupada, it's 11 o'clock at night, everybody's asleep. So he said, go and get Gaur-Sundar. So I wasn't sure how Gaur-Sundar was going to respond, because he'd been out of the movement for so long. Yeah, but I went and woke him up, and he immediately agreed. So then he came in. So I went in again, not because, you know, I was thinking that I'd have to instruct him how to do the massage, but I just didn't want to miss, you know, the nectar of seeing Prabhupada, you know, have this reunion with his old servant. You know, this is a man that had served him 9 years before and had a lot of problems, and then, you know, he's just kind of happened to come back. So he immediately started massaging Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada started reminiscing, you know, about the old days when he was with Govinda Dasi and Gaur-Sundar. And he started laughing, and he said, Govinda Dasi, she was my secretary, and Gaur-Sundar was massaging me, and he said, then Govinda Dasi, she wanted to massage. He said, and then I told her, I said, no, not possible. He said, I'm a sannyasi. He said, you cannot do. And then she burst into tears. And then he laughed like anything. And Gaur-Sundar was laughing. Anyway, they were having some nice reminiscences. So that was a good thing. But for me, what it turned out was that I got malaria. And Prabhupada, again, he had a doctor called. He came and inspected me, and I was on the, you know, the cycle. It would come in and then go out again. So when the doctor came, I was actually not feeling too bad, but still weak. So he inspected me and he said, oh, you've got flu. And I prescribed some medicine. Then after he'd gone, Prabhupada called me and he said, what did he say? I said, well, he said, I've got the flu. He said, that's nonsense. He said, you've got malaria. And then he sent the devotees out to get some anti-malarial medicine. And of course, that's actually what I had. So I had that for about 3 or 4 days, really bad. The next day we went to Delhi, and I was so sick by that time that I actually couldn't attend Prabhupada's Guru Puja or anything. I just went straight up into my room and collapsed on the bed. And then afterwards, when Prabhupada came up, he came in and inspected me and like that. And he looked after me. And one thing that I liked about Srila Prabhupada was that when somebody on his party got really sick and couldn't function, he never once even hinted that, you know, all right, then you should just stay off the party now and bring somebody else in to do the service. You know, he was quite happy to keep you on and, you know, put up with you as long as you were there. So I got over that after about 4 days, that malaria. And then a couple of weeks later, we were back in Vrindavan, and again, I got another kind of, it wasn't malaria, it was some other kind of virus. And again, I was feeling very, very weak. And for about 6 days, I wasn't able to do my service properly. And I had to call in Bhagavad Ashraya. He was there. And he came in and he was doing Prabhupada's massage for him every day whilst I was lying on my back in my room. But again, Prabhupada never once suggested that I should, you know, go off the party. He just waited until I got well again. So that was good. Okay, another devotee that had some problems, Mukunda Maharaj nowadays, but he was always kind of fairly, you know, weak and sickly. And when we had gotten to London in 1976 in July, then, you know, Prabhupada, as I mentioned before, was very, very ill. But despite his own illness, Prabhupada remains as full of regard for others as ever. When Mukunda came into his room looking pale and gaunt, Prabhupada became very concerned. Wanting reassurance from his disciple that he was all right, he asked if he was keeping his health and if he needed anything. So I think he had some kind of liver problem. He always looked very sallow and, you know, weak. Even now he has the same problems. I just brought some medicine from him. for him from India just a couple of days ago. So another one, Prabhavishnu Maharaj nowadays. He was a brahmachari in those days. So this was August the 22nd in Hyderabad. And he was on a traveling party. They were going around, him and there was like a group of brahmacharis. They were going out in twos, in vans, and selling full sets of Prabhupada's books to all the colleges and the universities in India. And they were getting a really tremendous response. You know, many universities were ordering 5 or 6 full sets of Prabhupada's books like this. So Prabhupada was very happy, and Prabhavishnu had come in to make a report to him in there in Hyderabad. So he was eager for more association with Prabhavishnu, and Prabhavishnu was eager for his. Prabhupada was pleased to hear that both the books and his disciples were being very well received wherever they went. He advised Prabhavishnu how to stay fit for his service. "Keep your health nice," he told him, "because the Indian climate, sometimes it does not suit. So you eat simple things, fruits, vegetables. Don't be a miser in the matter of keeping your health. But don't eat voraciously. You eat sufficiently, nutritious, vegetables, fruits, very innocent, little milk, that's all." His next suggestion made Prabhavishnu raise his eyebrows and laugh a little in mild apprehension and surprise. "Even if you don't eat these food grains, that is preferred, better. Vegetables and fruits and milk, that is sufficient, nutritious. There is no question of disease. But for our tongue, taste, well, then we eat so many cooked foods. But if we eat vegetables, boiled vegetables and fruits and milk, oh, that is sufficient. Ekadasi, daily ekadasi. And these peanuts, a few grains, not much. So that is also nice. Cashew, peanut, yes." So a bit of practical advice. Eat light and you'll always be healthy. Yeah. And let's have a look here. Few others. Dinesh Chandra Sarkar. So this was somebody that had written to Prabhupada. And this was August 26, 1976. An old associate of Prabhupada's, Dinesh Chandra Sarkar, had written from Calcutta, inquiring about Prabhupada's health and activities since he had seen him in Mayapur last March. He related how he had become bedridden with bronchitis and pneumonia for 2 months and is now so weak that he is unable to travel either to Mayapur or to the Calcutta temple. He begged for Prabhupada's blessings and asked for some news of when he would return to Mayapur. So Prabhupada sympathized with him about his poor health, briefly recounting his own health troubles and the cold that he caught in New York. "So I'm very sorry to hear that you are not well. You pray to Krishna and chant Hare Krishna. This body is a temple of disease. Jamra Mrityu Jara Vyadi. Disease is our inevitable companion. So still we have to execute our duty of Krishna consciousness as far as possible, and Krishna will help us." Similar advice that he gave to Rudrani and Krishna Valasini. Now another devotee that used to come and see Prabhupada regularly when we were in Vrindavan was Bhagatji. He was like a late middle ages. He lived just practically next door to the temple. And when we got the land and started building, he was the first local man who came forward to help Srila Prabhupada. And he was so enthusiastic that he donated the land next door, which our Gurukul is built on, and he also gave 1 lakh of rupees to help with that building. And he got involved in the daily management of the Vrindavan temple. So Prabhupada very much appreciated him, and he was a great favorite amongst the devotees. So whenever Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, Bhagatji would come and he would cook for him. And he used to make these really thick chapatis, but they were succulent, so nice, soft and, you know, easily digested. Prabhupada loved them. And in the evening, again, he would come and he would make Prabhupada his glass of hot milk, and then he would bring it in, give it to Prabhupada, and then he would sit and chat with him for a few minutes and then go off to his home. So Prabhupada used to treat him very, very nicely. You know, would laugh and joke and like this. But he also, he regarded Prabhupada as his guru practically. So this particular time, it was getting just at the beginning of winter, November, early November. So Vrindavan gets a little cold at that time. So as we talked, Bhagatji repeatedly coughed. Prabhupada also is coughing quite a lot, and he's had a lot of mucus, so that his voice is a little thick and nasal. But Bhagatji was unusually quiet because he'd got some throat infection. So Prabhupada diagnosed the problem, and he had Hazarduta read out a description of it from the dictionary. L-A-R-Y-N-X, larynx. A cavity with enclosing muscles and mucous membrane behind and communicating with nose, mouth and larynx. So Prabhupada indicated his own throat. Here, this side, this space, some connection, when it is affected, that is called laryngitis. So I know some of these medical terms, because he'd run a pharmacy, so. As always, he immediately gave the philosophical overview of the problem. Sariram Vyadi Mandiram. This is a temple of disease. So, the temple of miseries. Not only disease, there are so many other things. Matra sparsha stukantaya sitoshna sukadukada. Simply giving trouble. Sharira bandham. Asanapi kleshada asha deha. Deha means kleshada. Kleshada, troublesome. So, they do not know this science. And as they do not know how to get out of this body, then there is no science. So this is the only science, Krishna consciousness. So they do not know this science. They do not know what is the real position, how the troubles come, and how we are suffering. So nothing of the sort. And our Krishna consciousness movement is simply dealing with this. How to get out of this entanglement of the body. So this is the only problem. And the materialistic person, they do not think of it as a problem. So we are dealing with the real problems, and the others, they do not know what is the real problems, what to speak about dealing with them. They are completely in ignorance of how the body is changing and why there are different forms of life and where from they are coming. So these things they do not deal with. So, what was that? Mandiram Vyao. Shariram Vyadi Mandiram. Sharira, the body. Vyadi, diseased, Mandir, temple. It's a temple of disease, that's all it is. Okay, so that's a few things about specific person's problems and Prabhupada's advice. Some general advice that Prabhupada used to give out now and again. June 7th, 1976, Prabhupada wrote to Gargamuni Swami. So they had a boat preaching program that they'd set off. In February of 76, Prabhupada had inaugurated this boat, the Nittai Padakamala. And about 30 or 40 Gurukul boys, they'd sailed off down the Ganges to do some preaching in the villages there. So that was continuing throughout the summer of 76, and Prabhupada got a report from Gargamuni Swami, who was the new GBC at that time in Mayapur, and he sent a very favorable report. Of course, it was midsummer at that time, as it is right now. Very, very hot. So Prabhupada gave some practical advice for maintaining the health of the traveling party. He said, in the hot climates, you hold the programs in the nighttime, and the daytime can be used for resting. Also, green mango sherbet can be prepared. You roast the green mango and then take out the pulp. Mix this pulp with a little salt, black pepper, sugar, and make a liquid by adding some water and then drink it. And this will give protection from stroke of the heat. So, green mango sherbet. And Jayapataka Maharaj, now he has this made every year for the Mayapur festival. You know how to make that, Mataji? Green mango sherbet. There's the formula. Okay, some stuff about exercise. June 10th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. So after Nalini Cantor read Prahlad Maharaj's analysis of the 100 years of human life, how it becomes wasted by material activities like sporting and economic endeavor, Prabhupada invited his guests. So now you all discuss on this point, if anybody has any objection. So Prabhupada was having his afternoon darshan. He has a small garden that they made for him in Los Angeles. And whenever he visited there, every afternoon he would go and sit there. And then they would, devotees would bring any special guests, and the devotees themselves would go in there, as many as could get in. So there was one man, Dr. Wolf Rottke. He was a German scientist, actually. And very nice man, quite eccentric, but he'd become friends with Swarup Damodar. He met him at maybe Irvine University. And he became very impressed with Krishna consciousness. But he had a lot of, you know, kind of like conditioned views, scientific views that he was very attached to. So although he accepted Srila Prabhupada, you know, as his guru, at the same time he often had these, you know, kind of mundane concepts that Prabhupada had to keep clearing away from him. But he was very nice. So Prabhupada asked him, he said, "Yes, Dr. Wolf." So Dr. Wolf asked him, he said, "Do not some physical means come into keeping the body strong and healthy so that devotion is possible at all? Because to produce sick people, of course, is not in the Lord's spirit either, I think." So Prabhupada said, "No, our aim is not to create sick people. That's not our aim." So he was complaining because the devotees didn't do any exercise. Because we do kirtan, that's another thing. So Dr. Wolfe, he said, "Swimming and walking is important, I think." So Prabhupada said, "No, we do not say, neither. You know, look, we're not denying that." "Well, I missed that in the movement," Dr. Wolf told him. "I think it should not be made a sport, but it may be perhaps a physical must, yeah, under control." So Prabhupada affirmed that good health was necessary, but he didn't agree that it required some special regimen or arrangement. "No, if you eat more, then you require more exercise to digest this unnecessary loading. But if you eat simply, you just keep your body and soul together. You don't require this exercise. Little movement is going on. We are walking." So Prabhupada was taking an hour's walk every day. "But not this severe type of exercise as the surfers and fighting with the sea waves for 4 or 5 hours or 10 hours. So he'd just come from Hawaii. And we were taking the morning walk on Magic Island, which is like a promontory. Yeah, and down in the shorefront there in Honolulu, and every day the surfers would be out there riding the waves. Prabhupada, sometimes he would stop and observe them for a minute and then walk on, and then he would he mentioned it several times in his classes about the sea surferers. He said they call it, what is that, surfering, he said, "I call it suffering like this, suffering." Sea sufferers. So he called them the sea sufferers. Because he said that spending so much energy, you know, paddling out, you have to fight against all the waves, you know, just to get a little ride back in, and then you have to, fight out again. So he said like this, he said, "They don't realize it, that because they like to play in the waves, then all right, Krishna will give you a body that you can play in the waves." Said, "In your next life, you'll become a fish." So there were one or two of the devotees, you know, that actually, they liked surfing. And they were there because they wanted to hear Prabhupada lectures. So I saw a couple of them, you know, kind of like put their heads down. And Prabhupada noted that also. And he said, "Yes," he said, "someone has become a fish." In other words, you know, don't think this is just, I'm just saying this, that actually somebody's become a fish. Yeah. Because there's an interesting story I can tell. This is not connected with Prabhupada, but it's a good story. Our Balaram Prabhu, yeah, he used to be a surfer before he became a devotee. And he told us a story how, you know, they were into pseudo-spiritual things. So he and his friends, they had gotten this Ouija board, yeah, for seances. You know, you get a board and there's letters on it, and you get a glass, and then you call up the spirit, and then the glass starts, you ask questions, and the glass starts moving. So they actually got this Ouija board, and they got the thing going. So they had a friend, his name was Bobby Brown. And, you know, the surfers, you know, the young surfers, they all go out and booze up and they get a bit wild. So they'd gotten in a fight in a pub, and this Bobby Brown had his throat slit with a broken bottle and he died. So now, sometime afterwards, you know, these boys are there and they get the Ouija board working. And so they ask, one of them asks, what happened to Bobby Brown? So the glass started moving. F I S H. Balaram told me this. And they all went, fish. Wow, he made it. Because that was their conception, if you can become a fish, you know. And then millions of, good, Prabhupada said, and then if you become a fish, millions of lifetimes before you become a human being again. Yeah? Millions of lifetimes. Like that. Anyway. 9 o'clock. Okay, we're nearly out of time here. One last little thing. So, just on the point of general health. So, June 21st, 1976, Prabhupada was in Toronto giving class. So, Pradyumna loudly read out the translation. Therefore, while in material existence, bhavam ashrita, a person fully competent to distinguish wrong from right, must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life, as long as the body is stout and strong and not embarrassed by dwindling. Prabhupada unfolded upon us the deep realizations that he has gained from a lifetime's devotional practice and 10 years of constant global travel, witnessing the activities of every class of man in almost every culture of the world. He stressed the need for us to capitalize on the good facility that we have with our still youthful bodies. So long we are stout and strong, he said, we can work very nicely. The health is quite all right. So you take advantage of it. It is not that the Krishna consciousness movement is for the lazy fellow. No, it is meant for the strong man. Strong in body, strong in mind, strong in determination. Everything strong. So strong in brain means it is meant for, first for them, because we have to execute the highest goal in life. So keep up your strength. That is essential in devotional life. Keep healthy, then you can practice your Krishna consciousness with no problem. So one last one, all right? Just 2 minutes. Okay, so this will be the final comment. June the 26th, 1976, Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan. Of course, that was our first country ashram. Prabhupada really liked it there. And in the afternoons, he was coming out. The devotees had set up a Vyasasan, a very fancy carved one from Bombay, on a marble slab in the middle of the lawn. So he would come out and he would sit there in the afternoon sunshine, and the devotees would gather around and he would give 2 or 3 hours of darshan. So it was very good. So I mentioned to Prabhupada that 50 years ago, people were thinking that it was progress to build big skyscrapers. But now it is so hellish in the cities that everybody is moving out. Prabhupada agreed. Yes, actually, when there are so many skyscraper buildings, it is hell. The natural air is obstructed. In Bombay, you can see. If you're up on the top floor, you have a little facility. But on the lower floor, it is hell. If there are several skyscraper buildings, first floor, second floor, it is simply hell. No air. So simply you have to run on this electric fan. You cannot see the sky even. Therefore it is meant, what is that skyscraper? What is that scrapper? He'd probably, yeah, he'd pronounce it that way. Skyscraper, like this. So he said, what is the meaning? So I said, it touches the sky. So he said, you have touched the sky in such a way that I cannot see it even. So this is the result. You demon, you have captured the sky, so there is no opportunity to see it even. Always this electric light. So he looked around at the beautiful garden through the trees and across the valleys below. Now see, we have the sky, the sun. How nice it is. This is life. Green, up and down, clear sky, sun. So this is life. We get rejuvenation in this atmosphere. Now, what is all this nonsense? All skyscraper building, no air, no light. Jagatoita. The mind becomes crippled. The health becomes deteriorated. Children cannot even see the sky, and everything is spoiled. So there you go. All right, we have to finish there. Thank you all for coming. This is unfortunately the last session, and maybe next year when I come, we can do another topic. We didn't even finish this one topic, actually. But does anybody have any questions? Very quickly, last comment or questions? Yes.
One question about all the problems that Prabhupada had. Is that normal for a person his age, or does he suffer more than one normal?
Well, I think it's fairly normal. When you get old, you have all kinds of problems. You know, lungs get weak, liver gets weak, kidney gets weak. You know, so many different problems will come. Your eyes go, your ears go, you know, and eventually you go. Yeah. Yeah, it's old age, that's what it is. It means synonymous with disease. I remember when Mahotsu was the temple president in Brisbane, and we used to have some program distributing prasadam at the campus, university campus. You know that place we had? What was that address?
St.
Lucia. St. Lucia. We're just near the university campus. So we were having a program, and I was describing fairly graphically the horrors of, you know, disease, old age, and then finally death. And I was explaining how old age is such a horrible, you know, experience. And there was this one girl there, student. She was insisting, no, old age is very nice. You know, I know so many old people, and they're very happy, and they're not suffering. And I said, no, I said, that's not true. Everybody that's old, they're suffering. They might not admit it, but they're suffering. You can't avoid it. Your body's breaking down. You know, everything's jamming up, and nothing works as it should do, as it used to. She said, no, it's not true. She wouldn't accept it. I said, well, you're just an illusion. I said, you'll see when you get old. So, yes, you know, it's a difficult time. Therefore, Prabhupada said, don't wait until you get old before you take your Krishna consciousness seriously, because then you'll be so disturbed anyway, you won't be able to do it. So whilst you're fit and strong, now's your time. Apply yourself. You've got a good mind, you've got good senses, you know, good intelligence. You apply it to Krishna consciousness very seriously. Then when you get old, you'll have spiritual strength. So as your physical and mental strength disappears, your spiritual strength will take up. And Prabhupada had that. Therefore, he was able to do amazing things, you know, despite all the physical ailments. I mean, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, just before he disappeared, and his body had practically disappeared at that point. There was no flesh left, just skin and bone. And he was lying there, perfectly peaceful, completely Krishna conscious, still translating his books. And the doctor commented, he said, actually in this condition, the nerves are all pressing on the bone. Just to lie down itself is just totally painful. He said, an ordinary person would be screaming in agony. He said, in this condition, in the hospitals, they just pump you full of morphine. Yeah, they give painkillers and so many things because you can't tolerate even just lying down. It's so painful. Prabhupada wasn't taking anything, no medicine, nothing. And he was completely, perfectly, you know, Krishna conscious. The doctor was amazed. He's seen many people die. And he was amazed. He said, an ordinary person that could not tolerate being in this condition. So don't wait till you get, because you're already here. Just stick with it. All right, we have to finish. Rupa's going to say something, and then that will be time for our team. Sorry. Thank you very much for coming. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
I'd like to thank the Prabhu very much for his wonderful Prabhupada. And we also have lots of his diaries here. So anyone who would like to get some of his diaries and he can personally sign them for you, please come up during the aarti or after the aarti. Prabhupada ki jai.